One that I'm really excited about is doing more inclusive programming, but on a larger scale. So maybe not me teaching at one school, but maybe teaching at multiple schools at one time under one program. So that students can, even if the faculty members at that university or at that college don't necessarily have experience in inclusive design, I can come in and I can teach those classes. I could also do some professional development where I'm teaching the faculty some different techniques so that they can have inclusivity in their classrooms.
Welcome to another episode of the Innovation Insights podcast, where we dive deep into the minds shaping the future of industries through innovation, creativity, and groundbreaking research. We believe that innovation happens in all aspects of life. I am your host, Dr. Yolanda Sanders. Today, I am thrilled to have Cha-Cha Hudson with us. Cha-Cha is an accomplished fashion design educator, deeply committed to inclusivity within the fashion industry. She has made significant contributions through her extensive experience in designing and educating aspiring designers on creating garments for communities often overlooked by mainstream fashion. Specializing in plus-size design, Cha-Cha's expertise extends to clothing construction, pattern making, draping, and art direction. Cha-Cha's innovative approach not only empowers her students, but also challenges the norms of the fashion world to be more accommodating and diverse. Through her creative direction at Cha-Cha Nicole, she brings her vision to life, emphasizing the importance of representation and accessibility. Her blog further showcases her insights and dedication to transforming how fashion is taught and appreciated, with a focus on inclusivity at every level. Join us as we dive into a discussion about the challenges and triumphs of making fashion accessible for all, and how educators like Cha-Cha are reshaping the industry for the better. Oh, Cha-Cha, welcome to the Innovation Insights podcast. I'm so happy to have you here.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, well, it's been fun to watch your growth and your just impact on various parts of the industry over the years. And I follow you on social media and have really enjoyed all of your videos of draping and demonstrating. You really have built your brand out well there.
Well, you've been a great supporter on social media, sharing and liking. I appreciate it so much.
That's easy. It's my pleasure. It's very easy. Why don't we just start off with you telling us a little bit about your background and how did you become interested in fashion?
How did I get here? Okay, so the short answer to how did I become interested in fashion, I don't know. I had no idea. All of a sudden, I was 12 years old, and one day I came to my mom and I said, I want to learn how to sew. I don't know where it came from. I really wish that I did. I wish I knew what the influence was, but I have no idea. So like my mom always does, if you say you're interested in something, then she's going to sign you up for some classes. So she signed me up for a Saturday sewing class at a place not too far from where we live. And unfortunately, these classes were on Saturday mornings. So as a 12-year-old girl, I did not want to get up on Saturday morning. So their rule was, if you miss, I think it was 3 classes, you're out, no matter if you paid or not. And I missed 3 classes, and they replaced me with actually one of my cousins. Ended up going, but they took my spot from me. And surprisingly, I didn't stop sewing after that. After that, I actually became more motivated to sew. So that's how I started. That was when I was 12. All through high school, I made clothes for people. I made clothes for myself. My focus, I did like fashion design, but my focus was really on pattern making, because I found out, and I don't know if this was from like reading a magazine or something, but I found out that you can make patterns from a newspaper. And I was like, oh, I can make our own patterns from newspaper. And then from there, it'll turn into whatever I imagined it would be. And I was hooked. So that was all through high school. I got my bachelor's degree in fashion design. I got my master's in fashion and apparel studies. And now I'm at Iowa State getting my PhD. So that's the journey in short.
That's a great journey. And yeah, I love that you really followed something that you became passionate and interested in. And then having that family support too, so important.
Yeah, that makes a world of difference. It does.
Well, and I know a lot of your work has been focused on inclusive sizing. And, that has always been a challenge with our fashion industry, is recognizing that inclusive sizing is important. So will you talk to us a little bit about your thoughts on that?
Inclusive designing in our fashion industry. Okay. So I like to think of inclusive sizing in fashion is like coming in waves. So you have the peak where you have a lot of designers, popular designers, using some plus size models and on runway shows. And sometimes it's not even a whole lot, but just enough for people to say they're being inclusive, right? And then we have this dip where for seasons on end, you don't see plus size models. You might see a handful, maybe, but not really. Surprisingly, where I see the most, I'm not necessarily going to say innovation, but where I see the most growth in inclusive sizing would be fast fashion, honestly. Even though it's at a lower price point and you have cheaper fabrics and maybe you don't have construction that is as great, you still have more variety. Now, fit is something that still needs to be worked on, and that's across the board. So that's it for right now. But what I would say is also, I'm really excited to see what new designers do, like designers straight out of university. I want to see what they're going to do, because a lot of them seem like they're really interested in being more inclusive. So I'm excited about that.
Well, and you're in higher ed, and know you're working on your doctorate degree. Do you see yourself teaching? And if so, how do you plan to impact the future generation to make sure that they understand the importance of inclusivity?
So, yes, I do plan on teaching, maybe not in the traditional sense, but I always want to teach because I enjoy it a lot. I enjoy being able to connect with students and tell them everything that I know so that they can be better. So I will be doing it in some capacity, but it might not just be traditional. But it's really important. It's important for us to have inclusive design within education, so that designers can design for all body types, all different sizes and shapes. There was one time where I was teaching at a school and I was teaching continuing education, and a student came in and she already had her bachelor's degree in fashion design. What happened was she left a school and she wanted to design custom clothes. She was only trained on a size 6. So she was unable to make custom clothes for people because she was only trained to design for a size 6. Which is unfortunate. So she has to go back and do continuing education classes. And nothing's wrong with continuing education. But if you were supposed to learn that thing when you were in school paying for it, that's the problem. So I think we really just need to normalize the idea of everybody deserves to have stylish clothes and clothes that fit well.
I agree. And, you know, great call out to higher education or educational programs that are teaching fashion. Long gone are those days of the size 6 fit model, and that's all that we're designing for. I agree. So, you know, you mentioned that you will always plan to teach, but maybe not in the traditional way. Can you share some thoughts that you have about that?
Okay, so I have a few different ideas, but one that I'm really excited about is doing more inclusive programming, but on a larger scale. So maybe not me teaching at one school, but maybe teaching at multiple schools at one time under one program, so that students can, even if a faculty member is at that university or at that college don't necessarily have experience in inclusive design, I can come in and I can teach those classes. I could also do some professional development where I'm teaching the faculty some different techniques so that they can have inclusivity in their classrooms. So that's just some things that I've been thinking about.
Yeah, really great idea and very innovative approach to education. Yeah, I like that idea. I like those ideas. It's really
Thank
good.
Thank you.
Yeah. You know, so pattern making has been one of your areas in draping. Tell us a little bit about your love for draping, because you obviously love it. And you have, you know, beautiful videos that you've been creating for several years. So tell you, well, I want to explain to our audience who may not know what the draping process is, but what draping is in regards to pattern making.
Work. Yeah, sure. So there's different ways to come up with patterns, and you have like flat patterning where you're drafting from measurements. You also have, let me reverse that. So you have drafting where you're creating patterns from measurements, and then you have flat patterning where you're adjusting like a sloper that you made initially, which is just a basic, think like a basic garment. So you'll have like a front and a back bodice or shirt, you'll have a front and a back skirt, a sleeve, and then front and back of pants. And it's just the basic, no design elements at all. And then you would take those and you would manipulate them, and that would be pattern making. As far as draping, you have a dress form, something similar to this right here that I have. This is my half scale dress form. And you would take fabric, and you would literally take fabric and pins. You probably can use a pair of scissors, and that's all you really need to get started. And then you start draping or pinning the fabric onto the dress form. And I like it because you can see it kind of turn into something in real time. And it's just organic shapes. Some things that I could probably only come up with draping that I couldn't necessarily do with drafting or pattern making, or it would be a little bit more difficult to do, but it's a way for me to get my ideas out there. So that's why I like it. So I just turn on some good music and just start draping. It's kind of like therapy to me. Actually, somebody who I used to work with told me that to them it's kind of like ASMR, where it's really kind of therapeutic just to watch it happen. So yeah, I hope other people really get that effect from it too.
Oh, that's wonderful. A nice explanation of the different ways of making patterns. You know, with draping and just all pattern making, understanding the human body is important. What are your thoughts about that? And, you know, how did you start to learn about the human body and the differences in the human body when you're making garment patterns?
Yeah, so with draping, that's the thing. If you plan on taking, so when I'm draping, I'm just on it for fun when you see the videos of me draping. But I do drape in order to make garments. You have to have, your drape is only as good as the dress form that you have, unfortunately. So you have to invest in a dress form that's that really illustrates or shows the body as it is, not the idealized version of a body. So for plus sizes, you will see in most companies, especially ones that are not really high end, you'll see dress forms where it has an hourglass shape, right? And you have, it's bigger at the top, it goes in really small at the waist, and then comes out. So from research, you can see that most plus size bodies are not shaped that way. Even though that's the ideal shape, it's not really shaped that way. So that's one thing. With draping, you have to have a body form that's similar to the body that you're actually creating for. Also a similar size that you're going to be creating for. Because then that turns into, if it's not close to the size, then it turns into you having to grade. And then things can go really left with that if you have no experience with it. So for me, when I started out, I didn't have a dress form when I started out, but I was able to make a lot of prototypes and try them on real bodies. So if you want to get started, you want to make sure that you're working with real bodies, because these real bodies can give you real feedback. So that's what I would suggest for people to do if they're getting into pattern making, is to take a friend's measurements, and then from those measurements, create a sloper, and then try it on, have them try it on, and just test it and keep testing it as often as you have to in order to get it right.
Oh, that's, yeah, that's very, very good advice. Very good advice. You know, what, back in my days of teaching the fashion design and being involved with developing lots of curriculum at various places.
Okay.
One thing that we always had students do back in the day was take figure drawing classes. And, you know, it was uncomfortable because you're, you know, one, you're a bunch of people, and in most figure drawing classes, the model, you have a live model.
Yep.
That live model is not clothed.
I remember that.
Yep. And, you know, you do illustrations, but you so learn the body and the movement, the body. And so for our audience, to me, you know, future designers, fashion designers, I would suggest that you also take, you know, some figure drawing classes, some biology classes, anything with human. Yeah,
go to a local art center, or, you know, usually those places, they'll have some models come in maybe once a week or so and go in there and draw. I know some people try to use the figures. It's figures where you can kind of manipulate their bodies. But it's nothing like a human body. It's nothing like a human body. I totally agree. You need to go in there and see what the body looks like from all angles. Yeah.
Yes. I agree. I agree. And as it moves too, that's so,
as it,
so,
as it grows, also age. What does age do to the body? Like, what things are different? Yeah, what things are different?
Well,
from...
Are you asking me? I can tell. I can answer that question. Being the elder on this call.
Age does some things to the body, right? You know, it changes. And it's good to know, like, those changes. Changes in posture. You know, it's all really important.
Thank you. It is. And, you know, today there's so much great technology that can help with that, like 3D body scanning technology. And there's been some studies that students have done. One of my former students did a really great study on a more mature population of women and activewear and athleisure.
Okay.
Yeah. And you did 3D body scanning of the sample and, you know, things. So I mean, we're gathering the data. Sometimes the information's not getting out there as much as it should to people and to end users. And so that also brings me to, you know, some of the work that you're doing with Threads Magazine, because, you know, you have a nice, you know, you're in academia, you're doing the theoretical work, but also you're doing application and disseminating and sharing that information out through your partnership with Threads Magazine. So first, tell us how that came about.
Well, actually, it came about because one of my old coworkers at Syracuse, Jeffrey Mayer, who's the head of the Syracuse Fashion Design Department. Yes.
Wow.
His garments from his collection used to be, I believe, on the back page of Threads, every Threads issue. And he did an introduction, I think it was through email, to one of the editors of Threads, introduced me as new faculty. And from there, I did a podcast with them. And then I did a course, a draping course, Fashion Draping Fundamentals. I've done articles, I've done more podcasts, and it's just a really good relationship. I'm glad to be working with them.
That's really great. So tell us about, you know, yeah. So do you regularly write articles with them? And how often? And, you know, how do you manage that with everything else that you're doing?
Manage. Manage. Oh no, I don't know how we manage things. Yeah, so I actually have the issue here. It is coming out on February 20th. I don't know what day this is going to come out, but I'm guessing probably before then. And then when you open it up, I'm super excited about it. And this is the first, I guess this would be the first article that I've done with them where I have a spread. So I think it's a 8-page spread inside, and it's about quick wins in sewing for plus size sewers. So I am excited. So happy about that. But I have been in the magazine with excerpts about my course, the fashion draping course, which I would recommend, not just because I made it, but I would recommend it because it gives you step by step, like everything that you need to know. We made sure that that is in there for you. And then we also have other resources that you can access if you have any questions. And you can also reach out to me. There's a forum. So I would recommend it. And how do I juggle all of these things? I really have no idea. I couldn't say like some kind of work-life balance, but I don't even really know what that is. But I guess it's easier for me to juggle multiple things, especially if I really like it and I really believe in it. Yeah. So being able to record for Threads, do the articles, do my own things, and then also be in school, I had to really enjoy the thing. Like, I have a sticky note right here, and it says, what would it look like if this was fun? So every project that I approach, I think to myself, how can I make this a fun project for me so that I can get through it? And maybe that's how I really get through all of these projects, because I'm like, okay, if it's not fun, I won't want to do it. So how am I making it fun? How am I making it enjoyable for me?
Right.
So
that's good. That's good. And, you know, that's sometimes we talk about boundaries, and it's like, okay, I'm not going to work after this time or do this or that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's nice that you made a bound. You pray your boundary. It's like, it needs to be fun. And sometimes we don't talk about having fun. You know, we're talking about, no, it's work. It's work. But shouldn't work be fun?
Work should be fun. I listened to a podcast the other day, and somebody was talking about Mondays. They interviewed like a certain amount of people and asked them, do they like their jobs? And also, do they enjoy Mondays? And most people, even if they said they like their job, they didn't enjoy Mondays. And it was like the dread of it, I guess. But I guess if you're making it fun for yourself in different ways, whatever works for you, because it's going to be different for everybody.
Yeah.
If it's fun, you're going to enjoy your Mondays, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well,
I think Monday should be fun, and I think your job should be fun, and there should be laughter.
It should be. There should be. Ooh. I like that.
Oh. Hello. Well, that's so, you know, congratulations on that 8-page8-page spread and thread.
You.
That is huge. That is
thank
wonderful.
Yeah, I told the photographer, I said, we didn't make it to the cover, but we made it to the next page after the cover. So we're excited about that.
That's big. That's big. He has a major real estate there. That's really, really good.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of your posts about your dissertation on social media. Can you share with us a little bit about what you're working on with that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, okay, sure. So the largest portion of my dissertation is OER, which is an open educational resource. And originally I had these grand ideas, and I had to scale it down because within the time of the PhD, I can't do all of these things, but I can do some very important things. So the Open Educational Resource is going to go over drafting patterns, like I said, from measurements, and it'll be your basic blocks or your basic slopers. It's going to be front and back bodice, front and back skirt, sleeve, front and back pant, and making it to the measurements that you want as either a plus size designer or plus size consumer. So that's what the OER is about. There is a section on fitting. There is a section on grading. For some reason, within the fashion education system, there's like this mystery behind grading where nobody ever really talks about it.
I know. I was going to write a book at one point on it, and I should have. Maybe someday. I don't know.
It's not too late. Please do it. The books that I'm referencing right now are so old. Like, they are so old.
Yeah, they're written by Trevor Mine.
They are very old books. So I would say if you wanted to come out with a new resource, we wouldn't be mad at it. We would actually love you for it. But there is going to be a section within the OER that touches on grading as well.
Oh, good. I'm so glad to hear that. And it's so important. It's an important skill. And I don't know if you know this about me, but I was a production pattern maker.
I did not know that.
Yeah. You know, I was interviewing another guest a couple days ago. He said, "You've had so many lives." I'm like, "Yeah."
So many.
So many. But yeah, I was a production pattern maker at one point. And so I did a lot of grading because it was, you know, the patterns had to be perfected to go right out that door. And I was doing it when we still did the majority by hand.
Yeah.
Grading. So.
Fun.
So so glad that you're doing that. I'm really glad you're doing it because it is a lost part and a big gap in our curriculum.
It really is. Nobody ever really talks about it much. Like, students may ask, like, how do I get from this size to a bigger size? And that's the extent of the questions. And that's about it. I think it's really important to even if you can't have a separate class, just because time won't allow, the curriculum won't allow, at least have a portion of your pattern making class have something to do with grading.
Well, the students that used to have me, especially the ones at Colorado State when I taught a lot of curriculum there, yeah, they had it. I approached it as we did in industry because sometimes the textbook's a little bit more theoretical.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did it, I did it at my job.
Okay. Well, so even speaking of that, for the OER, the first part of the study, I did a survey with educators, fashion educators, to ask, what do you want to know about plus size design and inclusive sizing and things like that? And then from that, I generated some questions to ask professionals, because there is often like a disconnect between education and the kids from education are going into industry. Why is there a gap in between? So I don't know. But hopefully, I haven't conducted the interviews yet. Hopefully, they're starting next week. But what I want is to be able to at least bridge the gap some. So that it's like we're communicating with each other. Educators are communicating with industry professionals. Like, that's...
Thank you.
That's what I once said.
Thank you. That is one of the big goals of Innovation Insights, is to get academia and education to talk. Because I've been at it for 35 years, still trying to. So I'm going to, you know, the next whatever's left I have, I'm going to just continue to try to get everybody in the room. And so it's thank so you for doing important. That. That'll be great. That'll be such a great addition to both areas.
Yeah, I think so too. It's just that I don't know. There's not often communication. And I wonder if when a lot of factories were here in the U.S., I wonder if the communication was different between.
Okay.
Because then you can take your students to actually go and see factories. I know some universities do it. Like I know Dr. Ike at Iowa, I know that she takes her students to different factories. But, you know, in other states, there's not places to take your students so that they can
No, we do have some places here that are still doing production, but in Iowa, but there's a lot of places that don't. And so how do you get that experience? It was different because, I'm the OG these days.
There's nothing wrong with being the old one. Nothing wrong with that at all.
Well, a funny story how I got my job as a pattern maker. I worked for Rocky Mountain Clothing Company, and they're part of Miller International. Now they have cinch jeans and Cruel Gal and big Western wear company. And, no one would ever know that I was like Miss Western Wear, but I did patterns for them. But how I got that job was after I graduated with my undergrad, I had that summer between undergrad and starting grad school. And I was just kind of hanging out, taking custom orders, hanging out with friends, going back and forth between, my small town that I lived in and Fort Collins and just having a good time. And my father worked for the USDA, and he was the chief for a farm service agency. And so he was out and about roaming around looking at a farm or something. And he saw this building, and it said clothing, the Rocky Mount Clothing Company. And he was at Rocky Ford, Colorado, which is, small farming community known for their cantaloupes worldwide. Best cantaloupes in the world, good for Rocky Ford. And they had this factory there because they were still doing Miller International and Rocky Mountain Clothing Company was still doing production in the U.S., one of the few. And he saw that, you're like, I have this daughter that has a degree that just graduated with a degree in clothing. And so my father was, he's no longer with us. He passed away a few years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Several years ago. But he was a character. So he went over to the factory, walked up there, and basically said, I have a daughter with a degree in this.
Can you give her a job, please?
Basically. And so the next time I was back in Lamar, which was near Rocky Ford, he has me this number and he says, call this person and you have a job interview.
Like that? How do you know these people?
I know. Oh, well, the funniest thing is I ended up getting the job. I applied for a seamstress job. I got a pattern making job. I don't know how that happened. I was only supposed to be working during the summer. I was there for 4 years. I ended up going back to that factory, a few times. I got to know the manager of that facility, who was the person that met my dad. My dad introduced just hilarious, though. But it's just I have this daughter who thinks she's going to hang out with her friends all summer long.
Not going to happen.
No. So, there used to be factories here, and it'll be interesting to see if any of that ever comes back. I don't know. I think a little bit has.
Yeah. I don't see a lot of it coming back. And the only other way for students to really get insight into fashion design is through internships. But some internships are not as, So you may not be learning anything at all at that internship. I wonder if it's a way to kind of vet that. I mean, I guess maybe talking to other people who's interning with them before, but.
There is. And there's also, having guidelines for your internship program and process up there that you're not just sending students out anywhere.
For my students, if they got credit for their internship, I mean, most of them did. Some of them did it on their own. But for those who got credit and I was their advisor, I would be like, I need to know everything that you're doing in the internship. Like, this is not just, oh, I'm going to the internship, so it's 3 credits. I'm going to get an A. It's like, no, I need to know what you're doing every week. What are you doing? What are you doing? Are you doing anything that you can really use in the future? You know? But yeah. Some of them, it was out of their control because some of them didn't have the chance to actually really do mm-hmm. the things that they wanted to do or needed to do in mm-hmm. order to be better designers. So,
no, that's very true. Yeah. Well,
but that, yeah, that is definitely a way to get some experience. And I have a question for you too, as I'm thinking about it.
Sure.
What do you think about having to know how to sew to be a good designer? This is a leading question. It's like, I'm part lawyer here.
I don't feel like you have to be the best sewist or seamstress in the world, but you need to know how clothes go together. It's so important. If you don't know how clothes are going together, then you might want to consider another path. Because I've had students that weren't really great at sewing, but they tried. You know, they tried and they would be able to give you a basic breakdown and understanding of how these pieces go together. And that's what you really need, especially if you're going to be making patterns, which is also part of your fashion education, making cut packs. Like, you need to know, you have to know how these things go together. Why do you look like that? Was there a point where people said, you shouldn't have to sew?
Every program I've been a part of, like, sometimes it's the students, sometimes it's the faculty, thinking about the program, because garment construction classes are expensive. You have a lot of space. You can't do it in a lecture where you have a 50-minute lecture and you do it in a lecture hall. You have to have the equipment, the space to do that. So it is a resource that is expensive within education. And so there's always been discussions about, do they really have to know how to sew? And I believe merchandising students do too. And I will.
Why not the basics? They could take a basic sewing class.
They should, because if you understand the quality and the process going behind it, you're going to make some better decisions business wise but.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I understand with the sewing classes, they can be a lot. Like, I've taught sewing classes that were twice a week, 2.5 hours a piece. Okay. And then I've also taught sewing classes that was 4 hours straight.
Mm-hmm.
So I get that, but no, it's something that we need to know.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. So thank you for joining me on my soapbox. Great. I think every episode I jump up on a soapbox about something, especially with education.
I don't know if it's people saying that you don't need it just because maybe they're not necessarily good at it or they get frustrated with it.
All of it.
Yeah, but you have to know how clothes are put together. You have to know that. Even the basics will help a whole lot. And like you said, merchandising students, I think they should have to take a sewing class as well. Actually, I've had merchandising students take classes and they really enjoy it, actually.
They do. Yeah. And I've had, some don't. And, but I taught in programs.
You can't please them all.
No, we can't. And, but I've taught in programs where it was required for merchandising students to take. And then sometimes the curriculum changed and it wasn't required. But, if I'm going to sell a car, I need to at least know the basics of it. Where the steering wheel is. Where the gas pedal is. And maybe where the brakes are.
It'll all be helpful. I'll be helpful to know.
Oh my goodness. Well, Yeah, you talked a little bit about your future aspirations. What are some other things that you're hoping to do as you take on the whole fashion industry?
Well, I know this is going to be a question when I defend my dissertation as well. And I feel like it may just be me, but I feel like I need to have an answer soon. But I also realistically know I can do all of these things, but they don't have to all happen at the same time. So I'm trying to figure that out. So as far as the patterns, like I've been selling patterns for about 8 years now. But I haven't like released collections of patterns like consistently because I'm either teaching or I'm teaching. Or teach. I didn't realize how much teaching takes up all of your time because it's not just your time in the classroom, but it's also grading and it's also mentoring and advising, all the other things, being on committees, like all of those things, it consumes your life. And, you know, not necessarily in a bad way, but it's just a lot. So I haven't really had the time to really focus on the patterns as much as I want to. But I have an idea and I'm rebranding the patterns and I'm really excited about it. If you guys go to my website, I do have one pattern still available. There's a whole thing up there about like what I'm doing to change the previous patterns. But the signature maxi dress pattern, that is everybody's favorite pattern, is so versatile. I've seen students take that pattern and make some like really extraordinary things that made me think like, okay, all of my patterns should be the basis for something extraordinary. So that's actually what I'm working on now. But signature maxi dress pattern is available. The other patterns are not as of this moment, but they will be very, very, very soon.
Okay, so that's great. Well, we'll make sure that we have a link to your website with that. Get to all the podcasts, the audio, and the YouTube channel, too. That's great.
Yeah, so we have the patterns. We have the network for universities and colleges to be able to have more inclusive programming or workshops, seminars, classes, that type of thing. And then before I started at Syracuse, so actually it was 2018, I opened up a creative co-working space called the Social Cafe. And it was in Philly. We were open for 2 years. 2020 hit when we were about to open up our second location, unfortunately. So I have been thinking about that. Like, that's been on my mind a whole lot about maybe not the Social Cafe again, but maybe something similar. Like a innovation, like fashion lab. So kind of like the Social Cafe where we were having workshop seminars and classes and courses that taught people how to design and make money from those designs on the side because most people have full-time jobs. But also integrating inclusivity in that. So designing adaptive apparel, you know, for people with physical and cognitive disabilities, designing for plus sizes, designing for people who are usually marginalized in the fashion industry, and maybe even me being, or not me, just me by myself, but us being contracted by different companies who are interested in exploring the opportunity to design for other groups. So see, I have these ideas and it's like, okay, which one are you going to go with first? Because you can't do it up. I don't know that. So it's tough.
It's you're a true entrepreneur. You really are. And it's exciting you know, to hear that and your ideas. I can't wait to see. We'll have to have you back for these. And I know your time in Philly, because we had Gary Johnson III on the cast. And so he was very excited. So, you know, there's something with you all in Philly there, you know, your entrepreneurs. It's really cool. It's really, really cool.
No, I actually met, I was living in Philly, but I was going to school at the University of Delaware and teaching there when I met Gary. Uh-huh. And now he teaches there, I believe. So
he does.
Yeah.
He does.
Listen, the world is so small. It's so small. And for all of us to stay connected is really good.
Yeah, so it's great. And you both have been innovators of the week with Innovation Insights. So it's just been fun to recognize your work.
Thank you so much.
So we'll have to have you back, after you finish your dissertation, and then also when you start up your other ventures.
You can see what I do first.
Yeah.
Well, I know the patterns are definitely happening, yeah. And it's happening very soon. The other bigger projects.
Yeah.
I have to pick one for now.
They take time. Pretty take time.
Sometimes I just wish it was somebody that could tell me, this is the thing to do. And then I can just follow that instead of having to make that decision.
I've been listening to a lot of other podcasts and YouTube videos about entrepreneurship, and the entrepreneur, I was like, there's a new opportunity. Okay.
We're all over the place.
But it's exciting. It's exciting. I would like to get your definition of innovation. We asked each of our guests to define innovation. So how do you define it?
I guess I would define innovation continuing to ask why, how, what if, and who's not being served. And if you continue to ask those questions, then you'll be an innovator in whatever industry you're in.
I love that. So a definition with some questions that you need to ask, and really good questions. Like it. Oh, well, thank you for being here and taking time out. I know that you're super busy because you're teaching and working and writing and researching and dissertating and all of that. So
it's the dissertating that's getting me.
It's not for the faint of heart at all. I really appreciate having you here. I definitely will invite you back too. So
I look forward to coming back, and thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome. Oh, to our listeners, thank you for tuning in. And we hope that the conversation today really hit home the importance of inclusivity and fashion, and also encourage you to think about how you can contribute to making a positive change within an industry or within a consumer sector. So, and think about the questions that Cha-Cha asked, as an innovator, the things that you need to ask, and that will help fuel your innovation within whichever sphere that you're working. Remember to follow us on social media, stay up to date with what we're doing, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and leave a comment, and keep innovating, keep dreaming, and keep making a difference.